Packers fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Guys, welcome back in to a special early morning edition of the Green 19 podcast.
Yeah, there's nothing like a Monday morning after these night games, I'll tell you.
I know. I will say this. I left Lambeau Field at 2 a.m., which is an hour earlier than I thought I was going to be leaving. So all in all, I considered it a win, a good night. But of course, we were coming off of a Packers win over the Bears, yet another in what has become a long line of wins with Aaron Rodgers at the helm of the Packers. They defeated the Bears 45-30 to improve to 10-3 overall on the season. And guys, we're going to jump into the game here, but before we do, just another win over the Bears, 10-3 on the season. Where do the Packers sort of stand right now in your eyes, Spoon?
They continue to win games that are losable. And that's a credit to, you know, Rodgers, because he tilts the field their way most weeks, and he certainly did on Sunday night. And you know, they still have a nice cadre of playmakers that keeps them in every single game, and it was evident again Sunday with Rodgers, Davante Adams, Aaron Jones, Dylan. They just, as long as they keep those guys, it seems like they can be in any game. The question is, can they afford to keep losing guys? And we can get into that later. And that's kind of where they are right now.
Was that a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge about what they should do with Davante Adams this offseason as well?
Yeah, you know, the offseason is going to be crazy. And we don't know how any of that's going to play out yet. It's, you know, the longer, my feeling on Davante Adams is they blew it. They took too long. They should have done the deal in September. And every time he has a big game, the price goes up. Yep. So I'm less and less confident that they will bring him back next year.
I guess this could be more of a conversation for later in the offseason, because it's going to become a big one. But how do you let that guy walk out of the building?
I don't know.
You start looking in the closet for extra money behind the toilet. Isn't that where Joel Osteen found it? Behind the toilet.
Yeah, well, it's got to be funny money if it is. Sorry.
Yeah. To that point, I mean, Davante Adams had two catches for 18 yards with a minute to go in the second quarter. He had nothing. Mm-hmm. In the Bears seem to have a pretty good plan, a better plan than most, and you would expect that from Chicago because they know him better than most, right? They see Davante Adams twice a year, and you look up, obviously the 38-yard before halftime was a kind of a momentum swinger, but you look up at the end of the game, 2 for 18 a minute ago in the first half, 10 for 121, two yeah. touchdowns, including the record breaker, which was a really savvy play because Jalen Johnson had complete inside leverage on a slant route, and Davante Adams was able to set him up and still take the inside route, and you know, for 61 career touchdown passes for Aaron Rodgers against the Bears, which broke Brett Favre's record. So it's just, the reason he's the best is because you can't keep him down for an entire game. You might have stretches in which you're able to limit him, but it's almost impossible to keep Davante Adams down for an entire game.
Mm-hmm. As you said, you know, very little in the first half until the final minute. Let's sort of dive into the game, and especially that swing from at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half. So first of all, the second quarter was madness. I think there were like something like 45 total points scored in the second quarter, which is the most points scored in any one quarter in the history of this rivalry. And this rivalry goes back longer than any other rivalry in the NFL. So just stop and think about that for a second. We had a lot of records broken last night, including the drunkest quarter that this rivalry has ever seen with 45 total points scored. The Bears went into halftime with the lead, 27-21, after kicking a field goal to because they were up 24-21, then kicked a field goal towards the end of the, as the time expired in the first half, to go up 27-21. Green Bay came out in the third quarter and scored scored two touchdowns and a field goal off of a stretch of plays that really changed the game. We were looking at, let's see, they came out and they got the ball to start the second half, drove downfield on a 9-play, 75-yard drive that ended with an Aaron Jones touchdown. That drive in and of itself, to Ryan's point, included some big plays to Devontae Adams. It included a 1-2 punch with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. Then it included, let's see, a special teams, I believe, stop that made Chicago start the drive at their 25-yard line, which was a win considering where Chicago had been starting their drive so far that night. And we'll kind of get into that. And ended with a Preston Smith strip sack to give the Packers the ball back, which they immediately turned into a touchdown. Aaron Jones scored two touchdowns to within 4 plays. And then after that, you could say Chicago had 2 turnovers, which had turned into 14 points for the Packers. So that stretch right there to start the second half, again, saw the offense sort of get its footing back, saw the defense come up with a huge play. Preston Smith had been chasing Justin Fields around all night, and he finally landed a sack on him. And it started with good field position after getting that fumble back, because special teams coverage had finally made a stop. The 3 drives before that, Chicago had started on their own 41, 40, and 42. That meant there were returns of 41 yards, 40 yards, and 42 yards, respectively. So how important, guys, was that little stretch right there to start the second half? And what changed after halftime? Spoon, I'll start with you.
Well, I asked LaFleur about that. And essentially what happened, and his description was, at least offensively, was that they had not had enough plays to get to all of the things they wanted to do against the Bears. Now, some of that is their fault. They refused to run the ball early on. And so when they went to halftime, they went and figured out which plays they really liked they hadn't gotten to in their script. I'm talking about the script that they write out at this, you know, during the week that they try to follow as they start the game.
The first 15.
What's that?
The first 15. It's colloquial.
Yeah. And so they went to those best plays, and sure enough, they were the right plays, which says two things. One, you know, it's important to get a lot of plays early on, and it's important to run the ball early on. And they just never seem to be able to do that. And I don't know if that's Rodgers or if that's LaFleur, because we know Rodgers can change plays at the line. Mm-hmm. Regardless, they ran the ball they went to a power game with A.J. Dillon, and it seemed like what they did was they went inside with Dillon, and then they went outside with their receivers with these smoke screens or whatever you want to call them, just continually went back and forth, middle, perimeter, middle, perimeter. And it kind of got Chicago off balance. And I think that's what turned the whole thing around. And then, you know, you're right, they got something fixed on special teams, and then they got the strip sack, and then it was on, you know, then it was, they had all the momentum.
I'm looking at the playlist, and you're exactly right. That drive started with 2 big runs from A.J. Dillon, a short screen to Devontae Adams that went for 12 yards, another short screen to Devontae Adams on the other side. It was a screen to the left to Adams for 12 yards, a screen to the right to Adams for 16 yards, A.J. Dillon run, screen to the right to MVS for 8 yards, 2 AJ Dillon runs, Aaron Jones touchdown. So you're right. It was boom, 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 boom. People can't see me, but I'm making hand gestures as to what they did. And it was fascinating.
It was 6 of 9 plays on the ground too. And I thought that was an interesting point, that for all of how well Aaron Rodgers played last night, and he played magnificently, when they needed their defining drive of the game, the drive that gave them the lead for good, they got it on the ground and they found balance. And to Spoon's point, that's what they need to do. But I don't think we should gloss over that second quarter, because that was about the wildest thing I've ever seen. You know,
yeah, I remember, right. And that's kind of what I was going to ask you to kind of tee off on here was, were you shocked to see that happen and to see the Bears come out with that second quarter and put together what they did?
Well, the 6 touchdowns apiece, or 6 touchdowns in the quarter combined, 3 apiece. And the yardage on those were 46, 2, 55, 54, 97, 38. And the 2-yarder was a 4th and goal. So a pretty intense play, even though it was only 2 yards. I also don't know how many quarters I've ever seen that included a touchdown by all 3 phases in 1 quarter. You know, obviously the big play, but the 55-yarder was Rasheel Douglas's pick 6. The 97-yarder was Jakeem Grant's punt return for a touchdown. And you don't see that very often. So I think the 2 things that quarter, well, 3 things that quarter showed. One was in the positive for the Packers. They're capable of big plays, right? I mean, you've got Aaron Rodgers, you got Davante Adams, you can strike at any time like they did with the 38-yarder inside the final minute, which was a big play. But on the other side of that, this Packers defense had done a really good job all season limiting the explosive plays. And it's 2 straight games now. You go back to before the bye against the Los Angeles Rams, where they gave up a lot of explosives against Matthew Stafford. And then last night against Justin Fields and speedsters Demir Byrd and Jakeem Grant, that they gave up a lot of explosives. That is something that this Packers defense has got to figure out, because that'll kill you in January. And obviously the calamity that is their special teams unit is
Ryan. You jinxed your man.
Yeah, all I could say to the Packers fans for Corey Bohorquez is I'm sorry, because that, and it wasn't all on Bohorquez, although he contributed to it, but that punt game was atrocious. And through 12 games, Corey Bohorquez was having the greatest season of any punter in Packers history. It was not close, and that is no longer the case. He dropped all the way from 4th in net punting to 17th. In net punting in the league in 1 game. That is just impossibly bad. It is stunning how much of a drop that is in 1 game.
And like you said, not all his fault. Their coverage was pretty abysmal last night on special teams, on punt coverage and kickoff coverage. And Matt LaFleur noticed that or mentioned that, you know, there's been issues on special teams all year, and the bigger issue is that they have been different issues, so to speak. Last night, or the coverage most of the year had been pretty good. Last night it was horrible. They lost EQ, but I mean, with a concussion, he came out of the game with a concussion protocol, and he had been really, really big on coverage all year. But I mean, Spoon is one guy enough to ruin their entire coverage scheme?
Well, that's no. And to me, it was a strategical error. The 97 yarder, they were trying to pin the Bears back. He used an Aussie kick, if I recall, and they did not expect Grant to return that. I mean, it was inside the 5. Is that like the 3-yard line? But their scouting report should have told them this, just keep it away from this guy. And I don't know why they weren't kicking to the sidelines or to the corners to try to keep this guy in check, because, you know, granted, his longest return, I think, going into this game was 22 yards. but you could see on film how fast this guy was, and they kind of took it for granted. And so that's a strategic error on Maurice Drayton's side. And I still don't understand the kickoff that Herbert had right before the end of the first half when they kicked it to him. I mean, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just kick a squib kick? Yeah, you're in danger of possibly giving them field position to get a field goal, but the way your special teams is playing, you got to read that. And they kicked it deep to him. And what did he do? I'm actually looking it up because I can't remember how long that kick return was. But yeah, 42 yards, and he sets them up for a field goal. So, it was bad strategy and then bad execution too.
There's an interesting point as far as Jakeem Grant goes. This is the same opponent that Corey Bohorquez had the 82-yarder against, that missile in Chicago. And I spoke with him about that when I sat down with him for 30 minutes about the 82-yard punt, which is one of the 25 longest punts in NFL history. And a really important kind of facet to that was the fact that Jakeem Grant was not on the field for it. It was Damir Bird who dropped back. And when Corey Bohorquez noticed that, he thought to himself, oh, I can really lean into this one because it's not Jakeem Grant. The Packers know full well, Corey Bohorquez, before this game, called Jakeem Grant one of the best return men in the NFL. They know full well what Jakeem Grant is capable of. So to your point, Spoon, the fact that they even kicked it to him as regularly as they did last night was stunning. Because he's the type of returner that changes the game.
Yeah, and I thought Bohorquez in the first quarter when Grant had his first long punt return, it looked like he did exactly what he didn't want to do in that last game, was outkick the coverage.
Yeah, he completely did. 57 yards, totally out.
Yeah, 57-yard punt. Which means, according to the way they look at it, you need a 5.7 hang time for that to be coverable. And of course, Grant got a 34-yard return and it set up their first field goal. But yeah, it's just like, I'm sure you could pick apart every aspect of the special teams. It didn't really come together until the, second half, which they're lucky it did.
Yeah. And Aaron Rodgers himself talked about Grant after the game and said, we knew he was fast. He also scored that touchdown from Justin Fields that was not on special teams. It was just a short pass from Justin Fields that Grant took for 46 yards because he just flat out outran everyone. So they knew he was fast. And to your point, they knew coming in that he was capable of that. But even Rodgers had a moment about, he said, I've never seen a guy return it out of the back of the end zone. He said that was a little shocking, basically. And so I think that there was a little bit of devil may care from the Bears, if that makes sense. What do they have to lose at this point? Bring it out of the back of the end zone and return it? Sure, why not? Let's see what happens. And it worked out for him a little bit.
Can you please explain what devil may care means? Because I am so fascinated now.
Devil may care?
I've never heard that before.
Spoon, have you ever heard that expression?
Oh, absolutely.
I've never heard devil may care. This is the first time.
It means it's a nice way of saying that, well, there's no other nice way to say what I'm trying to say without having an FCC violation.
Be mean, Cassidy. Let it out.
It just means screw it. What do we have to lose?
Throw caution to the wind.
Yeah.
Okay, I've heard of that one.
Yeah. Well, why not? The devil's sitting on our shoulder making us do it. Here's a good way to explain it. You have the cartoons with like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, and they're both telling you what to do.
Yes.
You're listening to the devil because what do you have to lose?
Got you. Okay. I was
thinking the devil's telling you to return it out of the back of the end zone, even though you should never do that. And it's like, what do we have to lose? Sure, I'll return it out of the back of the end zone. And so I guess all of that to say, do you think that set the Packers back on their heels a little bit? Not that you ever want to, you would never admit to getting caught a little bit in a trap game scenario, but were they caught in a little bit of a trap game scenario in that first half, Ryan?
I don't know if it's a trap game or look, you know, we were talking about in the press box, Matt LaFleur's track record against coming out of a bye, right? The Packers got smoked in San Francisco in 2019 after a bye. They got smoked last year at
Tampa Bay. But both of those teams also went on to play in the Super Bowl those respective years. The Bears aren't going to play on in the Super Bowl this year.
No, which is why the Packers won, right? But they still played poorly. They still were sluggish for an entire half.
Yeah.
They still gave up huge plays to a terrible team. We didn't talk to Matt LaFleur much about that last night, but I think it's a worthwhile discussion is how sluggish he is historically coming out of a bye. They lost at San Francisco and Tampa Bay the past 2 years, but it wasn't that they lost. It was that they didn't show up.
That San Francisco game, they got boat raced. Bosa had the sack on Rodgers. It was like inside the 10. And
same with Tampa Bay. Back-to-back picks. Well, not back-to-back pick sixes, but basically the second one was like down to the 1 yard line. But they wasn't that they lost. It was that they got wiped off the field. And if they were playing anyone but the Chicago Bears last night, they might have been wiped off the field. So. I think there's something to this idea that, you know, 3 straight years now that the Packers haven't looked sharp coming off the bye.
Spoon?
I have a bigger question, though.
Okay.
Why did Aaron Rodgers get asked about special teams? Like, and he kind of answered it like he was the special teams coach, too. You
know? It was framed as, you're the leader of this team. What does this team have to do to fix special teams heading into the rest of the season?
Well, he is the GM, right?
And he's definitely the GM of the Bears, right?
And well, the owner of the Bears.
The GM owner of the Bears, I'm sorry. Owner of the Bears, GM of the Packers. And he did start it by saying, I don't pay that much attention to special teams. I'm not going to be in the film room tomorrow watching special teams footage. And then he said, but from my viewpoint on the sideline, and then he proceeded to give an incredibly detailed answer about special teams. So he is paying attention. But Spoon, to Ryan's point, you know, they could have gotten run off the field if it was another team. Aaron Rodgers, Rasul Douglas, and Matt LaFleur all mentioned the halftime speech by Preston Smith. And so my question is not so much about Preston Smith, but did this game serve as a little bit of a wake-up call? Because we were looking at the rest of this season as the Ravens being the only difficult game left on the schedule. And that may even change now with Lamar Jackson possibly being out. But the Packers, again, this is the NFL. Any team can win any given Sunday. But they could have coasted for the rest of the season to get to the playoffs. Did this game serve as a little bit of a wake-up call? Hey, that's not going to fly.
Yeah, it did. The one thing that, you can look at it in two different ways. Yeah, it was a wake-up call, but was it really? You know, did they wound up winning again? And so is it a wake-up call for the next time? Because the lesson here is that you can play a really bad half and still win. And I don't know if that'll fly against Baltimore. It depends a lot upon Lamar Jackson. And plus, they're beat up even more than the Packers are.
That's true.
And so
they got ball boys playing running back.
Yeah, and their best corner's down. And it's amazing how many teams are just limping towards the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I don't think there's really anybody on the schedule that's going to push them to the limit if they're playing really well. So they may be you know, again, the lesson might just be we can play like crap, but we're going to win. You know, Rodgers is going to bail us out. Davante Adams is going to bail us out. So we'll see how that plays out as the season goes on, because they don't have a Tampa Bay coming up or a Dallas or 49ers or anything like that.
Isn't that strange to think at the beginning of the year to where we are now, that now the 49ers might be a formidable opponent, and how thank God that they were able to get that game out of the way early in the season. Even then, though, it came down to game winner. Sorry, that was just a random aside thought. Let's look on defense. Justin Fields had a total of 298 all-purpose yards, 224 through the air, 74 on the ground. You mentioned the big plays and giving them up. It was sort of the pendulum would swing one way or the other. It felt like with the defense last night, they would either give up a massive play or come up with a massive play themselves, either the pick six, the strip sacks, and then the Channing Sullivan interception to end the game, which it was over at that point, but just to keep it from becoming even more respectable. How much longer can they get away with that, Ryan? And was that more of a just that's how special a talent Justin Fields is? Or was that something that the Packers were doing to not be on their P's and Q's?
I think Justin Fields did show a little something last night. He's a really talented guy, and he's a rookie. So you're going to have some of those telegraph pick sixes like he gave to Rasul Douglas, which was just a gift. And Rasul Douglas received it and took it the other way, 55 yards. But he's talented. I mean, I think he's got a future there in Chicago. And you know, they've kind of got a hot mess around him, and they've got to fix that, because to kind of curate a young quarterback's development, you need to have not the issues that the Bears have. But he showed a little something. But that said, yeah, I mean, they get away with it last night because they're going against a rookie QB. They get away with it 2 weeks ago because they're going against Matthew Stafford, who giveth and taketh away all the time. But that doesn't fly against Tom Brady, you know. And to me, to the Spoon's point, if they play their best, if they play well, they should be able to cruise all the way until about the time they face the Bucs in the NFC Championship game. And if some of these warts that they're showing, they're going to get absolutely exposed. They're going to be amplified if they go up against a Bucs team, because that's the type of team that will absolutely expose you on that level. So they know what the flaws are. They know what the problems are. It's just they've got to fix it. And, you know, big holes in the pass game and coverage is not going to fly against the Bradys of the NFL. The other thing, too, I think last night showed, especially when you look at, you know, the Demir Burr ripping off a short pass into a long touchdown, the jet pass for Jakeem Grant. They've got a bit of a speed deficiency on the back end of their defense without Jaire Alexander. They need, you know, Eric Stokes on one side is obviously the speed's there, but the other side, you know, for all Rasul Douglas's wonderful his journey, he's not the fastest guy. And I think it's a byproduct of just not having the speed with Jaire Alexander not on the field.
I'm glad you
say something about the defense. So I think part of it, you have to give some credit to Chicago, because they did a really nice job with, so this is the first game Justin Fields has played in what, 3 weeks? Mm-hmm. And so they had some things that they put in for him that were really well designed. The play to Demir Byrd, you know, they lined him up in the backfield, and it completely discombobulated the secondary, because I'm not sure I want to watch that play again, but it shouldn't have left Henry Black one-on-one with him without any safety help. But because he was in the backfield, I think maybe the safeties kind of disregarded him, didn't see any threat down the middle of the field because he was out in the, you know, coming from the backfield. And so it was just a really well-designed play. And so were some of the jet sweeps they had and keepers with Justin Fields. And I think they figured it out in the second half, and that was important. I also think my observation was that I thought Devondre Campbell looked a step slow, which is understandable since he was coming off COVID. He just didn't play with the same, intensity and speed sideline to sideline. I think they missed him a lot there. And then ultimately, you know, they won because they straightened a few things out, and then they had a talent advantage. Preston Smith started working on that rookie, Tevin Jenkins. And that was too much for the Bears.
I wanted to dive in more to the secondary there. To start, let's go with Rasul Douglas. Ryan, I'm actually going to disagree with you on that pick six. I don't think it was a gift. I think he read it the whole way. It was almost like an inside shoulder throw to the sideline. He snatched it out, from what I'm remembering. And
why did he read it the whole way?
Do what?
Why did he read it the whole way?
Because he knew where it was going. I think he just hadn't. He knew that's the play.
It was telegraphed.
I mean, that's like saying he was lucky, but he wasn't lucky. He was in the right place.
He got to make the play, and he made the play, but it was absolutely a gift. Telegraphed the pass to the point where he could read it by the bottom of his drop. I mean, that was about as telegraphed of a pass as you could possibly telegraph a pass.
Okay, I mean, if you want to use the word telegraph, then fine, but I still wouldn't call it a gift.
Well, that's the...
A gift would be more like the second pick six that he dropped, where it was kind of just there.
Yeah, I disagree. But continue.
Anyways, and Spoon, you can be the tiebreaker if you want to be.
I'm staying out of that one.
He did not Lambeau leap after that pick six. And when asked why not, he said he was still upset about the previous drive when he had the defensive pass interference and then had the missed tackle on the Grant touchdown. Granted, he missed the tackle around the 6-yard line. At that point, Grant had already run for 40 yards and outran a few other missed tackles as well. But Rasul Douglas was the last line of defense there, Grant stepped out of a tackle. It was just a straight up whiffed tackle from Rasul Douglas. As you mentioned, there was a speed deficiency there, but when Jaire Alexander is ready to come back on the field, when he's recovered and ready to get back on the field, how do you take Rasul Douglas off?
You can't take him off. So, and first of all, we don't know that Jaire Alexander is coming back. It's still up in the air,
right,
as to whether he does. You got to figure out how you can get Alexander, Douglas, and Stokes on the field at the same time. Because, you know, for all...
then Kevin King's the odd man out?
Yes. For all the focus on Douglas, Stokes played a pretty good game too. I mean, they didn't test him. And when they did test him deep, he was right there. So it was a testament to him that they didn't really throw to him, his side, unless I'm forgetting about some throws. I don't remember him being, in coverage on any big plays. So they're going to have to figure out how to get them. I don't think Douglas can play in the slot. I don't think Stokes can play in the slot. Jaire Alexander can. They'll have to figure out whether that's worth doing, because the slot guy's got to do some tackling in the run game. And I don't know how much tackling they want Jaire Alexander to do if he comes back. So, but yeah, you can't take Douglas off the field. Not a guy who's had two pick sixes and secured a game with an interception.
Yeah. They're not going to want to put Jaire Alexander in the slot. I mean, he would be of the three, he would be the one that profiles there.
Yeah.
But his coverage shutting down half the field is way too bad. You don't want Jair Alexander to tackle. You're not paying him to tackle. You're paying him to shut down half the field, right? So, like,
absolutely.
Not really an option either. I don't know what they're going to do there. I really don't know what they're going to do there. That's a tough decision because none of those you don't put a rookie that's played really well in the perimeter of the slot. I wonder if it's going to be Rasul Douglas in the slot because I don't think it's going to be Jair Alexander in the slot.
I don't think Rasul Douglas can play in the slot.
So what do you do though? I'm with you, but what do you do though? Because they're not putting Jair Alexander in the slot.
I don't know about that. They might. Your three best players on the field, you wouldn't do that.
I think they're going to want to protect him and his future coming off that shoulder. I don't think they're going to want to put him in the slot, which is a much more physical position.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that is a big concern, but this is the problem Joe Barry's got. But they can figure out a scheme, they can protect Alexander, and you know, whether he has to play off a lot or I don't know. There's a way to get those three guys on the field in some way. I just don't know about Douglas. And maybe you end up playing more dime so that Alexander can play a slot where he doesn't really have to, you know, be in the mix for making a lot of tackles, but he is going to have to tackle at some point.
He is. Well, and part of the reason why I don't know if you want to put him in the slot is because Jair Alexander doesn't shy away from contact. Like, that's just part of his game. He might be 5'10", but he is as tough as they come, and he'll deliver a boom like he did on Najee Harris, and he won't think twice about it. But you got to save Jair Alexander from himself because that's the way he plays.
Well, but he got hurt playing outside, so, you know, making a tackle outside. So how do you protect them completely? I don't think you can. It'll be interesting to see if he comes back what they do.
A couple of years ago, I can't remember if it was 2018 or 2019, but the Chargers played a defensive scheme for a decent portion, about a fourth, more of like a third of the season, with seven DBs on the field for the majority of the game, which is insane. But there is precedent. There is a scheme there where it can be done. The NFL is a copycat league. So, I mean, that would be insane to think about. But if you've got to get your best players on the field.
Yeah, you could do it if you're facing some pass-happy teams. But yeah, that's not Joe Barry's style. I mean, he wants to stop the run.
Right.
And so Campbell's going to be on the field no matter what. And you're going to have the two safeties. I don't know. It's kind of a good thing to debate and something we'll keep an eye on.
Yeah, I'm very dubious, and I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I wish I had some you know, definitive answer. But I'm very dubious you're going to see Jair Alexander in the slot just with the physicality of that position and how important he is in shutting down half the field in coverage. I just have a hard time seeing it.
When we ask Matt LaFleur, he's going to say, "That's a good question. That's one of the things we've got to figure out." That seems to be his
good problem to have. Good problem to have.
Exactly. Devondre Campbell, just a note, finished with 16 tackles last night, which put him over 100 for the season so far, which is a team leading. And he had a lot where it was running a guy out of bounds too, which I don't think gives him credit for the tackle. So, you know, to Spoon's point, maybe not as physical as they would like him to be, but he was still a presence out there.
I think he kind of got into his groove in the second half.
Yeah.
After, you know, being a little bit rusty to start out.
I thought the best example of that was the Jakeem Grant 46-yarder. I mean, he had a chance to make a play there on the sideline, and it's a play that you've come to expect Devondre Campbell to make down the field.
Yeah.
And he just did. It was a touchdown saving tackle he couldn't have made, and he just didn't. So yeah, there's definitely some rust there.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that we sort of took away from the game last night was Alan Lazard stepping up. He said it wasn't necessarily in Cobb's absence that it was still his role. Aaron Rodgers did say there was a little bit to that. You know, maybe he got some of Randall Cobb's snaps, all of that to say, whether it was Lazard this week, it could be Equanimeous St. Brown next week. Spoon, do you feel comfortable with where this receiving, obviously Davante Adams is your top guy, but Spoon, do you feel comfortable with where this receiving group is at without Randall Cobb for the foreseeable future?
Yeah. I thought it kind of was to Ryan's point in our last podcast that they probably would have won every game with Randall Cobb. Without Randall Cobb. I'll still defer and say the Rams game was really critical, that he played a huge role in that. But they can put Alan Lazard there. They can put Equanimeous St. Brown there. And they can put
motion Davante Adams inside a few times.
Yeah. And so I don't think it's the biggest loss. The biggest, the thing that really hurt them was St. Brown went out with a concussion and then Malik Taylor got hurt. And so they were really down to three receivers, Adams, Lazard, Amari Rodgers, am I missing? Oh, and Valdez-Scantling.
And they used Mercedes Lewis a good bit last night as well.
Yeah.
Four targets, four receptions, 51 yards.
So, I don't think they really felt Cobb's loss last night. I think they were okay without him.
A bigger loss maybe, again, on the offensive line, which is where they've just had one right after the other so far this year. Billy Turner went out. And let's talk about the offensive line for a little bit too. There were two sacks last night. Both came off Josh Nineman, but one of them, I know we were saying, really kind of came more because Rodgers held onto the ball for a long time. Do you still feel comfortable with Josh there? How soon do they need to get David Bakhtiari back for you to feel comfortable for a postseason run? Ryan, I'll start with you. And what does this line look like possibly without Billy Turner now?
Well, just look at what the preferred starting lineup is for this offensive line. It's David Bakhtiari, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Royce Newman, and Billy Turner. And they are down to Royce Newman at right guard. In the second half last night, the offensive line was Josh Nyman, John Runyon, Lucas Patrick, Royce Newman, and Dennis Kelly. It is remarkable how beat up that offensive line is. And you see it most years. I mean, every once in a while, the Packers and NFL teams in general get through a season with just real fortune and luck on their offensive line as far as injuries go. But by and large, attrition really hits the offensive line over the course of a season. It rarely hits like this. This is, and we don't know the extent of Billy Turner's injury, but this is about as bad as it could be. And, are you comfortable? No, because this is your second, and in Josh Diamond's case, your third option at these spots. It can't be comfortable. With that said, Josh Nyman's played really well for a third string left tackle. And, Dennis Kelly's a guy that I was just thinking the other day at practice how, Dennis Kelly was considered a really good signing at camp because he played a lot of football. He's kind of the Rick Wagner fill-in as that backup swing guy. And he just hadn't played because he had a need to, because Billy Turner had been a stalwart on that right side, the one stalwart really. And it looks like Dennis Kelly's going to get it helps that the Packers have a guy, Dennis Kelly, coming off the sideline that has played as many snaps in his career as Dennis Kelly has. So yeah, it's a problem. And they desperately, desperately need David Bakhtiari back before the playoffs because it's a real issue.
Spoon, same question.
Yeah, I think it's huge. And you know what? All year I kept asking myself, why are they keeping Dennis Kelly around? He's been hurt, his back has been acting up, and they seem to have enough tackles, and they proved they are smarter than I am by keeping him around. It was
that far. Spoon.
I know that's hard to imagine, but
I know.
you know, he played a pretty good game from what I could tell. But they, you know, at some point, this attrition takes its toll. So they absolutely have to have Bakhtiari back. And LaFleur said they're hopeful that he'll start practicing this week. How quickly they can get him back, I think the fact that he was already practicing and had, what, almost probably like 6 weeks at least of practice, or it could be less, I'm not sure. He shouldn't be that far off. So I think you could see him starting maybe in the Baltimore game or maybe in the game after that. And but they need him badly, badly, because they are so thin. And not only that, they just don't. If they played a team like Tampa this week, ooh, it could be really ugly. And Baltimore will give them plenty with their defense.
They played a team like Tampa this week with where their line currently stands. Those pass rushers, the things they do are illegal in 37 states. I mean, it could, like you said, it could be bad. Guys, we are going to wrap up here. Well, I think we have dissected this game 6 ways to Sunday. But before we do, I'll give you both 60 seconds. Actually, I've even got a little sand timer here. Just like the sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. Ryan, you can go first. 60 seconds on Chicago, Packers, your favorite Christmas candy. I know we did movies last week. We can go candy this week. Ready, go.
Well, first of all, the holiday is an absolute chick flick. I don't know
what. I made Ryan watch it this weekend.
Yes, I watched it. I didn't get through the entire movie. And that's not because it's a chick flick. Hey, I can watch. I'm fine with that. I'm nothing against rom-coms. All right. They can be wonderful movies. And I'm not saying the holiday was bad, but this notion that the holiday is anything but a chick flick, even a good chick flick, is absolutely, I'm not seeing it. I'm just not seeing any movie which primary arc is unrequited love and finding love. That is a rom-com. I'm sorry, but I don't know how else to put it.
It's about finding yourself and what's truly important in life. Spoon, I just know you have an opinion on the classic movie, The Holiday, but if you want to take something else for your final 60, go for it.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there. Mostly because I haven't seen the movie, so.
Shame.
Really care. I'm not going to get in that argument. Anyway, the thing that kind of looms, that I've been thinking about, is that sort of looms over this season, is who are the Packers going to be when they're in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. What team are they going to be? Are they getting set up for that team that gets to the NFC Championship and then just doesn't have enough to get past some team that gets hot? I don't know what we're going to learn about them in the next 5 weeks. It's 4 weeks. They don't have like that signature game that they need at the end. And so we'll see. That's kind of where I am with this team, is I can't figure out what they're going to be when the playoffs start. And that's everything.
You don't think Arizona's a signature win?
What was that now?
You don't think Arizona's a signature win?
Well, yeah. Back how long? A month ago? A month and a half ago? I mean, we're talking about right now with all the injuries they've had, with, you know, their lineup a little bit different. I just don't think that we know or we'll find out anything more about them in the next month. It'll happen when they get to the playoffs. We'll find out what kind of team they are.
Yeah. I was thinking there last night when we were sitting in the press box watching the Bucks-Bills game, that the Bucks wouldn't really necessarily, in my opinion, have that signature win either, unless I'm forgetting one. But there are very few teams that can out-talent the Packers. But when it comes to that Bucs front seven, I think they have the talent advantage. And so to your point, Spoon, can they get that put together before you get to the playoffs and get that line sort of put back together? Because that's going to be the biggest difference maker when it comes time to make a push. If they can keep their run game going the way it has been, though, that can be a huge difference maker. It's a lot easier to run behind a big offensive line. So we will see. We will see this weekend. Guys, I will see you in Baltimore. I'm excited to see D.C. and Baltimore decorated for Christmas and get some crab cakes. Are we going to get crab cakes on this on Saturday, Spoon?
I'm not sure if I get into town in time to do it.
Well, they stay open late.
But don't forget, you got another podcast coming up before that. So don't.
I know.
Don't
I'm just getting excited. I'm looking out ahead. Of that one. I'm doing what you're not supposed to do, and I'm looking ahead to the next game.
You are. Never look ahead.
I'm excited. Well, as he said, we still have a full week of practice and coverage to get you ready for the Packers versus the Baltimore Ravens. So stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage as they do gear up for that game. And we wait to see what the word is on Lamar Jackson. Until then, this has been the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.